Johnson here, the host of the Tony Johnson Show. I am the bald-headed wonder from Northern Virginia. I try to use different taglines, guys. Basically, I'm Tony Johnson. I'm a husband, I am a father, and I sometimes get on the mic just to, you know, just let loose everything that's going on in my mind. just want to thank you for coming to the show. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for telling your friends. Thank you for telling your family. Thank you for telling your neighbors and all those people in your neighborhood, if that's a thing. I just want to take this time to thank you guys. And I also want to take some extra time to thank my good friend, Miss Chanel Evans, for coming on the show and talking about yoga, gratitude, as I put my hands together. The whole namaste is a whole different lingo that I did not mean to use. So she uses the word gratitude. So gratitude to Miss Chanel Evans for helping us understand what she's doing and how she's doing it and how she's combating mental illness. So moving on to my other friend, Miss Chelsea Moody. She is a child counselor. She helps adolescents in their time of need. Some have been, you know, been through situations or going through situations or are about to endure some things in their lives or have endured in some things in their lives. And she kind of takes a huge deep dive into what she does, how she got involved in it, why she even chose to do it, you know. I think it's interesting that she chose kids instead of adults. So that's going to be an interesting story nonetheless. Fun fact about this show. This show was actually recorded a week before my son was born. So I would say this was probably like my absolute last episode that I did before I went on a long hiatus to do the whole father thing, husband thing, and trying to juggle the podcast in between. So, you know, the first thing that's important in life is family. All the other things that you do for fun need and have to kind of fall to the side. That's just my personal preference. My family is my front runner. My family are the people who cheer for me before I do anything else. So, enough about me. Why does it need to be about me, right? It's like the name of the show is Tony Johnson Show, right? No big deal. No. Real talk. We're about to go into the real sit down with my good friend, Miss Chelsea Moody, right here on the Tony Johnson Show. I am in the sit down with my good friend, Miss Chelsea Moody.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. Yeah. You have a wonderful office here. What you call it? I got caught in a little bit of a storm. And when I got here, it was on the other side of the parking lot.
Oh, you were. It gets confusing for many people.
I mean, but I got here on time, so there was like 10 minutes. I was like, good, we're fine. Chelsea's joining me here in the sit down. Chelsea, just tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of what you do.
Yeah. So again, thank you so much for having me on this radio show and giving me the opportunity to just hear more about what you do as a talk show host and the opportunity to tell you a little bit more about what I do. So, so I am a counselor. I work with kids and adolescents, and I help them with their feelings, essentially. So everything from anxiety to depression, especially bullying, I help lots of kids with that.
We're definitely going to go and talk about that
a
lot.
Yeah.
Guys, we're talking about continuing my big special on mental health awareness. I know it was in Mental Health Awareness Month was in May. However, as I stated in my last conversation with Tiffany Coffey, this show is just based on an inspiration I got from a friend of mine, Miss Autumn Coffey, who passed away about 3 years ago, December of 2014. I could be mistaken, 15. No, 14. It was 14. Who sadly left us due to suicide. And I found inspiration through that, not in a good sense, just trying to bring awareness to mental health. Sometimes we don't, in my opinion, we don't really take it as seriously as we should. So, you know, I figured, hey, Tony, you know a couple people, so let's get together and make it happen. So we're here now talking about mental health awareness. So first things first, how are you doing today?
I am doing better than I deserve. I am doing fantastic.
Yeah, you actually are, man. Like, real quick backstory between Chelsea and I. I know, guys, there's always a backstory with everybody I get on the radio with. Yes. But hey, man, this is the Tony Johnson Show. Everybody, yeah. I got a lot of friends. And one of my good friends here, Chelsea, we used to work together. I won't mention the school, but we did work together in a classroom with 4-year-olds.
Yeah, so, there was a lot of them.
It was a lot of them. So a lot of hair-pulling moments.
Yes,
so,
but, yes. Not on the kids.
No, not on,
our,
no,
on our own selves.
On our own selves, yes, yes, yes. So on that sense, I mean, It was a life-changing experience. It's a self-teaching, and you and I hit it off right off the bat. Mm-hmm. We just like had, you know, conversations beyond conversations about everything, whether it be about your family, my family, kind of self-analyzing the kids a little bit.
Yes, one can't help but do that sometimes. When you have certain issues come up, it's like, I wonder how this came to be.
So. Yeah. So with your you're a counselor.
Right.
So you did your studying at
Georgia State.
Georgia State. That's right.
Yes.
So with your studying, what was it like doing during your study? Was it hard? Was it difficult? What are some things that you encountered?
Yeah, it was a counseling program at Georgia State that I highly recommend. And you gain a lot of experience. You have practicum and internship opportunities, so that's where you're working, you know, directly one-on-one with, you know, clients under supervision.
Right.
And, you know, before you get to the practicum supervision part, you do a lot of heavy coursework, so you're learning a lot about child development, because it's very important to have an understanding of, you know, how kids process information. You learn a lot about, you know, counseling skills and techniques. So, for example, let's say you're sitting down with a client and there's a lot of resistance, like they're kind of shut down and not really wanting to open up.
Kind of like away from the world.
Yeah, they're, you know, they might be just feeling uncomfortable even, you know, like maybe they've had bad experiences in therapy before, or maybe they've just heard things about therapy, like there's some stigmas against going to therapy, like, oh, you're going to go talk to this shrink and they're going to, you know, try and bring out all of these repressed childhood memories, and they're going to make you feel like all these things are wrong with you that may or may not be there. And that's not it at all. You know, it's really for the client to go on their own journey of self-discovery and see what they learn about themselves. And so in the coursework at GSU, we learn about different techniques you can use to help people feel more comfortable. And, you know, to help, you know, return control to the client. Because, for example, you know, it starts as simple as when they come into the office saying, choose wherever you'd like to sit. Instead of saying, you're going to sit here in this chair, you know, giving them options, you know, because it's a vulnerable seat to be in.
Very much so.
One's feelings. So it's really fantastic to be able to return control to the patient so that they're able to feel in control somewhat, you know, because it's their feelings. They get to decide how much they want to share or not share. Right. So in school, they really do a good job of talking about, you know, ways to build the therapeutic relationship.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you were talking about people kind of like, oh, man, you're going to therapy. Why therapy? Mm-hmm. Why do you think therapy is like gets such a bad rap? Right. Not all the time, but like, my aunt, shout out to my aunt Luce, who's going to be listening to this show. She works in mental health mm-hmm. as well.
Great.
And one word she says she doesn't like is calling somebody crazy.
Right, yeah.
Because
it does have a stigma attached to it.
Yeah, when you work, she said, when you work in that field, it's like, wow, that word, like, really hurts.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, imagine it's your loved one who's having a manic,
mental breakdown.
Yeah, a
whatever.
Manic episode or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, they're... I try and, you know, pick my battles in a sense because, you know, there are some social settings that I'm in where somebody's like, did you see that movie? That was crazy. Like, you know, sometimes I'll pick and choose if I'm going to be like, hey, did you know that that term that you just used can be very offensive to individuals struggling with mental health illness?
Right.
You know, depending on my relationship with that person, you know, I'll pick and choose when I'm going to really go into it. But, you know, if I have a close relationship with the person, I will let them know and say, hey, you know, did you know that that could be hurtful to people who are struggling with mental health illness?
Because, exactly.
You know, being termed that you're crazy implies that you've lost your mind completely. And for what we know about a lot of mental health disorders is that sometimes they're just going through a rough season of their life.
Exactly.
Sometimes they're just having a momentary chemical imbalance, you know, and they just need some help to get that balanced, you know. It's not always a permanent situation, you know.
Right. And perfect example when we talk about people kind of being on the loop-de-loo, mm-hmm. there was that controversy with Kanye West. Kanye, oh, I know, right?
There's several. I just want to make sure I'm tracking with the right one.
Right, yeah, there's several, but I think the biggest one that we're talking about is one on TMZ when he talked about slavery being an option, talk about opioids, and just kind of like having, to me, on the outside looking in, oh, man, he's going crazy. Is that crazy Kanye? Da, da, da. Mm-hmm. But on the outside looking in and trying to, like, analyze it, it's like, okay, he's not crazy. You know what I mean? We get what he was trying to say, but it was just, like, came off really ignorant, came off really stupid. Mm-hmm. Uneducated, uninformed kind
of
thing.
Yeah, I didn't watch the full thing, so I will say that. But it's one of those things where people do have to be mindful of how they communicate things because it can hurt other people's feelings.
Exactly.
So, from what I have heard, it was, saying something to the effect that, you know, slavery is a choice when it's, you know, it clearly was not.
No.
So I'm wondering if potentially he just...
I'd say this, and guys who are going to be listening to the show, you talked about this before, bringing it up again, but I see where he was coming from. However, I just feel like he is not in the right mindset mm-hmm. of really thinking about the things that he says. It's mm-hmm. kind of like the right hand doesn't tell the left hand what it's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, the brain did not tell the mouth what it was about to say.
Yeah, that's so. Impulse control. It's something that many people struggle with, which is to be able to, you know, before saying something, being able to think it through and, you know, reflect on how it could affect other people. And so that's, you know, a big part of something called mindfulness. There's a huge mindfulness movement going on right now that's been helping, you know, me as well as many of my clients help heal, because when we focus on the present moment and all of the things that are going right, it can really help empower us over our feelings.
Right.
And sometimes we have a natural tendency to focus on the past or the future. But what about the present moment here, right now? And so there are many positive things existing in the present moment. And so it's a wonderful thing to be able to remind people that even though there are a lot of chaotic things going on in the world, we have our breath.
Right.
The in and the out of our own breathing, to help calm us in moments of stress. So.
Right. So what got you into studying the mind, like psychology, therapy? Yeah. What got you into that? Yeah. What put you in that role?
Right. So I would say I took an AP psychology course in high school.
Right.
And I just fell in love with it. It was the first class I'd ever taken that I really just fell in love with. I said, wow, there's a whole field of study about the human mind and how we learn and how we process feelings. What? That was so different from history and, you know, other types of sciences that I had learned about in right. school. So this was really refreshing to be able to learn about the many ways that we, you know, process feelings, different causes of dysfunction. It was really helpful.
Right.
So I did wonderfully in that class, and then I said, okay, when I go to college, I think I might major in this. And
so you basically found something you're really, really good at.
Yeah.
And you're like, you know what? Let me try to get my education right.
That's right. Yeah. And that
was hard. Pay for it to be a blessing.
Yes. So,
oh, man.
Yeah. And so, honestly, I heard from many people, don't get a bachelor's in psychology. It's worthless. And, you know,
I don't like hearing that.
It's a lot of negativity, and one person's situation isn't necessarily going to be the same for everybody else's. So instead of listening to what others were saying, I focused on what my passions were. And so I got my bachelor's in psychology. Yes, I realized that I could not work clinically with clients unless I got a master's. So I took the next step.
Good.
And I decided to apply to get my master's, and so I did that. So it was just about finding what I was passionate about, what I'm interested in, and leaning into that. And so in the fall, I believe, I'll be going back to school, actually.
Really?
Yes.
Before we started recording, you were telling me you were about to put the final nail in the coffin on your school loans.
Oh, yes, that's right. So everybody listening, student loans, you can pay those off, okay? It is very possible. You can work hard and you can pay them off. So that was from my undergraduate degree, so...
Congratulations.
Yes, thank you.
A lot of people out there are like, you know what?
Yeah.
I just got help.
Yes, that's right. It's very possible.
There is a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yes, there are many lights at the end of the tunnel. And so, yes, y'all can pay off the debt. Absolutely. Student loans, it is possible. Through hard work, you can do it. And so, so I'm going to be going back to school in the fall to get my PhD in psychology. So
awesome. That's
the nerd in me, just wanting to always be learning and figuring out ways to advocate for people.
And so, to help out people.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. So we got a lot of things to cover.
Mm-hmm.
So they say I ran across a not a fun fact. Mm-hmm. Unfortunate fact. Mm-hmm. 1 in 5 people deal with mental illness.
Yeah.
Now, that's many different forms of mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
With that being said, about 800,000 globally have committed suicide, with 41,000 out of that 800,000 have lost their lives due to suicide in America alone.
Okay, in the U.S.
Okay. In the U.S.
Okay.
Now, you can correct me if I'm wrong.
Oh, yeah, I don't have a fact checker right now with me, it's too many lives being lost.
Too many. And a lot of lives have been lost due to bipolar, depression. You can help me out here. I can't really name too many off.
There's so many
right now.
Yeah,
but
depression is the main one. Bipolar as well. Those are the There's others, but absolutely.
Kind of break it down as far as like mental health. I want to talk more about. I kind of want to touch more on depression.
Mm-hmm.
Can you kind of like take us into where that kind of comes from? Is it a chemical imbalance? Is it, could it be life experiences that we never, you know, kind of just like take us through that?
So there are many causes to depression. So like you're saying, there are chemical imbalances that some people have. So that means it's not something you can, you know, see just by looking at them.
Right.
But in their brain, there might be certain neurotransmitters that aren't firing correctly.
Right.
And so everybody has different views about medication. A lot of people prefer to go the natural path when it comes to, you know, healing mental health illnesses. And then some people go the medication path. And I am in favor of what the individual wants for themselves. So if people are wanting medication, I can refer them out to a psychiatrist who specializes in that,
right,
who can help them get on the right medication for what they are experiencing. And so, yeah, it could be a chemical imbalance. I mean, there's also a genetic factor where it can run in families. So if people have, you know, relatives or parents who suffered with depression, it can be genetic. Also, life events. So let's say somebody goes through a traumatic situation, they could have some residual effects from that.
Yeah, I've learned that a lot of people, and I don't know numbers, but some of the leading causes are stuff that's happened in their homes.
Right. Post-traumatic stress disorder. You know, that can happen from people who go away to fight in wars, but also there are internal wars in people's minds that are going on from horrible, horrific events that have happened to them. So survivors of all kinds of abuse, human trafficking, you name it. There's so many things happening right here in America that are having many people suffering. And so getting treatment and being proactive about it is really the best method. And so that will help minimize their suffering by being able to get the help they need. But because there's so much stigma and shame around getting help sometimes,
it's hard.
Yeah.
And it goes back to what I was saying before, is like, it's kind of like almost, oh, well, you don't need to see a doctor. You're okay.
People will minimize it.
You're just going through a storm right now. You'll be okay, whatever. Mm-hmm. I had a listener tell me on a post that I put up on Facebook.com/ Tony Johnson Show. I was talking about why we're so prideful when it comes to seeking mental help.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the comments I got back was not enough family support.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of pulled that person off to the side. For some reason, I wanted to dig into it a little bit more. So I kind of asked, okay, are you talking from a sense of something that you went through with your family, or like you're going through it right now and somebody tells you, oh, God's got it. You're okay. God's got it. I'm a religious man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a firm believer in Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And so is my wife. Mm-hmm. However, you know, when people are going through things, you know, a lot of times it's easy to say, oh, you'll be all right. You know what I mean? And, oh, you can't talk that mess. God's, you know, just whatever. Like, why is... In the comment I got back from it was, we use God as a cop-out as far as dealing with something mentally.
Oh, yeah. It helps why do you think that is? Yeah, that's a great question, because it helps people not have to be very vulnerable. It's so easy to just say to somebody, God's got it. Have a good day. You know, as that person just shared with you their traumatic experience, you know? So it takes a lot more vulnerability to say, wow, I had no idea you were going through that.
Exactly.
What can I do to help?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so while, you know, Jesus can be a wonderful foundation, if we really look back at the life that Jesus lived, I mean, he was weeping and crying with people. You know, we have that documented in scripture that he was a big comforter.
Right.
And so we can do that too. We can really lean into people's pain and discomfort that it brings about when we're in their pain and help them. So it doesn't mean that everything's going to be solved instantly, but to just let your friends and family, coworkers, whoever it is who's confiding in you, letting them know that you're having compassion and empathy for their situation. Because exactly. All too often, people are just utilizing some sympathy, where it's like you just kind of, yeah, say something like, oh, yeah, everybody has struggles. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, maybe, you know, maybe that helps that individual feel like they're helping them by just kind of putting a Band-Aid on it and walking away. But I usually encourage people to, you know, step outside of your comfort zone, you know, be a good listener, hear what they have to say instead of, you know, rushing off.
Because I feel like, yes, God can help us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've had talks, you and I are firm believers in Christ. And we do understand that. However, God has given everybody gifts. God has given you a gift in the psychology realm, the therapy realm. So, you know, you are a true living testament that, you know, God puts people in your lives for a reason.
Yes.
So, with that being said, like, you say you do deal with kids. And, which leads me into my next thing. We're talking about bullying. Have you ever seen that show on Netflix called 13 Reasons Why?
I've heard of it.
I have not watched
it. I've heard many things about it, but I have not. I haven't watched it. So I believe it has something to do with suicide.
Suicide. I think it has something to do with, and my listeners can correct me if we're wrong. A lot of bullying that
sure
it's I think it's broken down parts now like there was season one and now there's season two, and a lot of people were like, oh man, that's so stupid, and bullying is like really heavy.
It is, and
you know, I'm ashamed to say this, but when I think about the bullying going on today, I'm like, man, are you kidding me?
So a lot of people will say, back in my day, it was much more severe. Well, so here's
because it was like for me growing up, I was picked on from kindergarten to like fourth, fifth grade. That's when puberty kicked in. I grew a beard in eighth grade, and everybody was like, holy crap, I don't know if I should punch you or call the cops. So, but it was just one of those things where, like, I experienced so much bullying, physical and mental. Like, part of the reasons why I wear glasses is because of bully. They got me glasses. So
a bully got you glasses?
I had to get these glasses because bullies used to, like, beat me mercifully.
Oh, so you're saying they would, like, hit you in the eye?
Yeah, like they hit me in the eyes, like beat me up, steal my money, call me this, call me that, like all kinds of stuff.
That is horrible.
So, like, you know, I know people are like, oh, Tony, I know.
It's hey,
I'm okay. Yeah. No, yeah, but no, like, that's horrible. But it took a toll on me mentally because I was, I'm a lover, not a fighter. And a lot of times I was just so passive and all that stuff. Made me an easy target for a lot of kids.
Oh, I see.
But versus what I went through back in the day when, you know, my dad's answer was, you know, ask them which hand they want to pick. You know what I mean? The right hand or the left hand.
To get hit
and
with?
Yeah. Oh, and then, you know, you just say pick a hand. And that's how you handle that situation. Nowadays, kids are not handling that situation. I'm not telling people to go out and start beating up kids. I'm just saying, you know, enough's enough kind of thing. But it is gone beyond that part of, you know, physically standing up for yourself. Now we're seeing kids being bullied to the point where there's the Lakeland High School situation where, come to find out, this kid was bullied while he was in school. And some things, he was adopted, went through foster care, and winded up staying with a friend of his parents and all that stuff. So, like, there's, like, so many things going on, but just kind of want to just, like, touch a little bit on bullying because that's, like, the leading component to, you know, a lot of mental illness.
Absolutely. So that definitely goes back to environmental causes of depression. Bullying can lead to depression, and it even goes back to post-traumatic stress disorder, because it all depends on the perception of the individual. Right. If, you know, somebody, like you're saying, you know, you are saying that you were bullied all the time and getting beat up, hit in the face. I mean, depending on how you process that, you might have perceived that as being a traumatic situation and might have flashbacks or something. I mean, it's pretty...
Some people do.
So it really just depends on the perspective of the individual. And it's heartbreaking because parents will send their kids to school so they can learn and make friends. And then oftentimes they're coming home and their kids are crying because, you know, they're getting beat up at school. And so I see what you're saying. A lot of parents will say, you know, back in my day, I got pushed into lockers, and you know, there was you know, I can see there being some generational differences. However, the one thing that unites all of this is that it's an unwanted stressor. Somebody seeking out somebody who they perceive as being vulnerable, picking on them, and trying to make their life miserable.
Right.
And so that doesn't feel good, whether it's done physically, emotionally, cyber, like online.
Yeah, because now it's different now.
That's right.
When you and I were younger.
Right, that's right.
It used to be verbally, which is still is worse.
Right, or physically. But now, why do all that?
Now it's happening.
A lot of kids and teens are choosing to just, you know, send out a nasty message about somebody online, and then it spreads to the whole school or something. So it's all of these methods, they're all wrong. And they can all cause somebody to feel depressed, because it depends on that individual's perspective on things. And so we definitely want to take bullying very seriously, because it can have an individual feeling like, wow, what's, you know, why do I even exist if people are just going to
do this to me?
Yeah. And so we want kids and teens to know that your life has meaning and purpose no matter what these other peers are saying about you. And so that's where I come in, is to help validate kids and teens' feelings and their experiences. Also to work with the schools to make sure that the bullying is being handled from an administrative perspective. We want to make sure that the bullying is coming to an end, obviously. Right. And so it's a multifaceted approach where we have to help rebuild the self-confidence of the kid or teen who has survived all of this trauma. And then we need to also be making sure that what they're being exposed to, whoever that bully is, that it's being addressed so that it stops.
Right.
And then also, too, I would say if there's a bully at school needing to feel so in control and in charge of another human being,
because that's another form
I would say that
there's
maybe
something that person's going through too.
Healthy people don't need to feel dominant over other human beings, you know?
Yeah.
That's not a very secure attachment to have when trying to make friends. And so I would even, you know, go as far as to say that we shouldn't villainize, you know, perpetrators of bullying, because, you know, some research has shown that there is a reason why they're doing it. Does it make it right? Absolutely not. People should not be harming physically, emotionally, any of those ways, should not be harming other individuals. However, we need to address the reason why that individual is bullying so we can stop this cycle.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's I think bullying is never going to stop. I mean, we can sit here and say the effects of bullying and how it's just like ignorance and government and
it's passed down
presidency. Mm-hmm. Like it's like one of those things that will be here after we're here. Mm-hmm.
The good news is there's hope, folks.
There we go. Yeah, so. No, there is hope. Yes. And I don't mean to be negative or anything. Yes. I'm just being realistic.
Oh, absolutely.
One of the things I learned from my last show I did with my last interview with Tiffany is she read somewhere about the word hope. She broke it up into like acronyms. Mm-hmm. Hold on. Pain ends. Mm. So God, I found my title for the show.
Nice.
But with bullying, you say you deal with kids who have been bullied. Now, what about like kids or adolescents in like the homes and the reason why I'm touching with kids, because it all had to start somewhere. Mm, you know what I mean?
A lot of it does stem from childhood.
Lot of it stems from childhood. So kind of tell me what have been some of your experiences, mm-hmm. like some like, oh my goodness, and some like you've seen some really good results.
Oh, like the progress?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, when it comes to getting treatment, it's very important that, you know, there's a trusting relationship between the therapist and the child. So right. Once there's that therapeutic bond being built, you can get so much work done. So if you don't trust somebody,
Is it hard at first?
It depends, you know. Some people's temperament, it'll be they're very loquacious and extroverted, and some they're just more shy and introverted, and perhaps they have had different situations and things in their life that have made them feel like they can't trust adults. Right. And so it just depends on their background, honestly. So some it's easier to build trust with, and some it just takes a little bit more patience, which is totally fine. And so this is wonderful because we set up treatment goals. So right. Based off of their symptoms, we set up what the goals are. For example, a treatment goal might be if a kiddo is coming in and they're experiencing bullying at school,
right.
We have to work on many different things. We've got to work on building up their self-confidence, because their self-confidence has been absolutely...
shot.
Yes, it has been absolutely obliterated. And so I work with the child to help put those pieces back together. So
right.
I use something called play therapy, which works wonderfully for kids. And for those who aren't aware of what play therapy is, it is a method and technique that is used to help kids and teens, and adults too, help process their feelings in a non-threatening way. For example, there will be a sand tray. Like, I have a sand tray in here right now.
Yeah, you got a couple of them.
Yes, I have kinetic sand, which is the sticky sand that you can use to build castles. And then I've got the dry sand that can be used to just show many different things in the sand. And so, for example, I'll have a kiddo, you know, take different miniatures. Miniatures are just little human beings. Yep, little figurines. And I'll say, show me your family in the sand tray. And that gives them the opportunity to show me, you know, what themes come up in their play.
Right.
Because children don't always have the fancy, sophisticated language to communicate what's going on in their world. Sometimes it has to be through play. Especially with kids who are on the autism spectrum. Perhaps, you know, certain, you know, things are overwhelming for them to be able to verbalize. So through play, it's
you
very
can
helpful.
See where they're coming from.
Yes, exactly. So, right. You know, it's a beautiful thing to be able to see how they represent their family and their friendships in the sand tray. You know, it's just about helping them have a safe space to communicate their feelings. And so, you know, I have to be very clear with parents that I'm not just playing with your child. You're not,
right,
you're
exactly.
not paying,
you're
for,
not
me
paying
just,
for me to play.
Yes. Everything is very intentional. And so that's what it's all about, is making it intentional so that whatever activities we're doing, it's being used in a way to help build confidence. It's being used in a way to help them process their feelings, even through art. Never underestimate the power of art. So in here you'll notice I have lots of colorful artsy things in here. And so we'll even do paintings. Right. You know, I'll have, you know, kids paint out their feelings about a situation that was very overwhelming to them. And that helps empower them, because they get to be in control of the different colors they use.
Right.
They get to be in control of who they include in that painting.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very healing and freeing to them to be able to represent that. And so play therapy really works to help each child be able to communicate their feelings in a way that's natural to them. It's as if their toys are their words. So it
right.
helps them, you know. Even adults I've seen it work with as well. So
right.
especially trauma survivors, you know.
Yes.
It's difficult to dive into trauma sometimes.
I was
so.
About to say, like, when you're dealing with anybody who's been through a traumatic experience, like, mm-hmm. that's got to be hard.
Oh,
especially
absolutely, yeah.
Victims of molestation,
mm-hmm.
rape,
mm-hmm.
War.
Oh, absolutely.
Even pregnancy, too. Like, some people, I mean, a lot of people know this, but postpartum depression.
Oh, yes.
With,
yes.
with pregnant women. That,
yeah.
That plays a huge, huge place
absolutely.
Of it.
Absolutely. People... you know, don't always realize how common postpartum, you know, depression is. And luckily there's been more research lately coming out about that, so that's some good news. And so we definitely have this, you know, stereotype that, oh, after the baby's born, it's going to be all sunshine and rainbows. You've got this new life to take home with you. And for a lot of women who experience postpartum depression, they really struggle. It's a daily struggle. It's
really hard, I've noticed.
Yeah.
So, like, with traumatic experiences onto the silent ones. Mm-hmm. For example, we've had a few celebrities that were kind of well-known, well-known that have committed suicide. There is this one singer way back, I want to say in the 80s. He did the song This Christmas. Oh, my goodness. I'm going to look it up.
I am blanking as well.
Oh, my goodness. This Christmas.
Yes. Thank you, Internet, for being our friend so that we can consult it when we forget things that are right on the tip of our tongue.
Yeah. So, like, Donny Hathaway, that was his name.
Yeah.
I kind of did a little bit my own research via TV and reading. Mm-hmm. Donny Hathaway, musical genius. What led to his demise? Because he did commit suicide. He was diagnosed with schizophrenia. They said it started happening, it just got to the point where it was like, what else can I do kind of thing.
Hopeless.
Yeah, kind of hopelessness and kind of seeing and hearing things. One night his wife came downstairs and caught him staring at the television, just his underwear on, and it was snow. Just, you know, like snowy screen TV. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, so that somebody's telling me to do something. As time progressed, you know, he would try to hide it. And then it was just like people would catch him doing the most most ridiculous things.
Yeah.
Until one night, you know, he jumped out of a window because a voice in his head told him to jump out of the window. Now, on the outside looking in, we would have never known that about Donny Hathaway. Robin Williams committed suicide.
Heartbreaking.
Shocked my world. Like, I had no idea that he was even dealing.
Right. Well, yeah. Kind of sort of.
Yeah. Well, kind of sort of with the whole depression kind of thing. He wasn't open and honest about it. He was open and honest about the drugs, but the depression thing we did not know about. Mm-hmm. So kind of like educate us on the silent,
right?
The kind of like the silent illnesses.
That's right. I think there is a lot of, you know, misconception around celebrities as if they're these superhumans. No, people, they are born into this world.
Right.
Granted, a lot of them have, you know, some privileges.
Exactly.
You know, there's no denying that. Financial privilege. You know, fame, you know, does grant people many different privileges. So that does make a difference. So I'm not denying that. However, when it comes to mental health illness, it does not discriminate. It does not care where you live, who you are, anything like that. So we need to acknowledge that it can happen to anyone. And so when something comes out in the news that a celebrity, a high-profile celebrity, has committed suicide, you know, sometimes I wonder, it's probably a mix of things that shocks people. One, finding out that that individual was struggling with depression. Two, thinking that, oh, but they had it all. They had the money and the lifestyle. And they didn't have to want for anything. What happened? And so, you know, that's another misconception, is that material things can create joy. I think it can rent a lot of happiness, but it can't, you know, buy true joy. You know, joy comes from friendships, you know, meaningful conversations.
Like this one we're having.
That's right. Exactly. That's how bonds and connections are made. And so the reality is that material things, we can't take them with us when we do die. We have to, you know, really focus in on the present moment and what we have. And what we really have that can never be taken away are these memories. These memories that we have, that we create with people, the bonds and connections, that's where a lot of our identity comes from.
Yeah.
And so that's why if a child grows up with a very harsh and critical parent, they get to thinking that there's something wrong with themselves, that, oh, maybe there is something wrong with me because of all of that negativity and verbal abuse that's been said to them.
Mm-hmm.
But imagine you have a parent who is speaking life and truth and positivity that helps build their identity and character so that they feel confident and capable.
And that's why I always say that, you know, in September, I want to say September. I'm banking on it being September. But the way this baby is growing,
oh yeah, that's
probably
right.
Won't make it to September. He'll probably make it to
August. Congratulations again.
Yeah. One of the things I said to myself, there were some things that my parents did that I won't do with my child.
Mm-hmm.
There are some things that my parents did do that I will do with my child.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the things that I myself want to really do with my child is speak life into my
child.
That's
right. Positivity.
And not saying that my parents were never positive.
Mm-hmm.
Two wonderful human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Did they have their flaws? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I think when it comes to what my child decides as a career choice in life,
mm-hmm.
whether it be an actor,
right.
or a singer, or a rapper,
artist,
or whoever, like whatever, something outside of what you do and what I do,
mm-hmm.
that makes us money.
Yeah.
If you find joy in it, then do it.
Right.
I feel like that's my ultimate goal with my child,
yeah.
is, you know, speaking life.
That's
right. Oh, you can do that.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
Not saying, oh, there's no point in doing that career.
Exactly.
You're not going to make any money. And granted, you know, people do need to be realistic about things.
Yeah.
Because the cost of living just keeps going up due to inflation and many different things. But, I mean, to crush a child's dream when they're talking about what they want to be when they grow up, please.
Yeah.
Entertain their creativity and just know that, you know, there's an impermanence to these things. Things change.
Tell them about the pros. Tell them about the cons.
Yes.
However, just remind them. Look, I am behind you.
And that helps engage that frontal lobe of the brain where we have higher thinking and judgment. And
what did
you
call that? Endorphins or something?
I think it's just a region of the brain that's responsible. It's either the prefrontal cortex or the frontal cortex where our decision-making lies. And so kids do need to get a lot of exposure to weighing things out. So when a child says what they want to be when they grow up, help them weigh out those decisions. And so one game that I absolutely love is the Game of Life. And have you played that one before?
Yes, I have.
So I have it in here. And that's a wonderful game because when they go down different paths in the game, for those of you who haven't played it, you basically have a little card.
Unless you've been living under a rock, guys.
Right.
We're
unless
gonna
you
go
have
over
under lock. Yeah, rock.
She's going to go over it and
yes,
how you do it, but it ties into what you're saying.
Yes, it really is a game of life. So you graduate from college, or you can choose if you want to work straight after graduating from high school. So I'll have a lot of, you know, kiddos ask, oh, so should I go to college? Should I graduate from high school? And I say, you choose, you decide. And then we get to talking about what are the advantages and disadvantages of going to college or, you know, working straight out of high school. And so those give kids opportunities to weigh out decisions so that they can make an informed choice. And so when it comes to, you know, really cultivating a child's, you know, creativity, it's a great thing to be able to let them weigh out those decisions so that instead of shooting it down and saying, no, you definitely have to go to college, even if, you know, that is something that's a value within the family, which is to go to college. You know, sometimes kids will create a defiance if they have a parent who's always telling them, don't do this, don't do that. Then they might be like, huh, you're saying that I have to go to college? Well, I'll show you.
I'm not going to go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we don't want to create any defiance here. We want to cultivate their own way of thinking about things so that they can weigh out the advantages and disadvantages of, you know, making certain choices. So, and that'll just help them in life, being able to think critically about certain decisions. So,
And that's, I like that because, like, you know, part of this talk is a lot of it's choice. Mm-hmm. A lot of it's choice. Sometimes what we're going through, whether it be depression or bipolar, mm-hmm. our choices are kind of enhanced due to what we're mentally dealing with. Mm-hmm. What are some ways that you yourself mm-hmm. have, like, because, you know, you were telling me before we went on air that mm-hmm. you deal with anxiety from time to time, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. I deal with anxiety and mm-hmm. sometimes doubt. Mm-hmm. My wife will always tell you I'm an overthinker.
Like, I think we all have moments where we overthink things.
Like, I'm already thinking about what's happening 4 o'clock tomorrow. 9 yes, o'clock see, in the
you're
morning
doing it.
Monday.
That thinking,
you know,
in
mean?
The head instead of the present.
Yeah,
moment.
It's one yes. of my flaws, and it's one of my strengths.
Yes.
But how do you yourself yeah. kind of just like, all right, Chelsea, we're cool.
Yes,
we're fine,
that's right. Know? So anxiety is something that many, many, many people struggle with. And, you know, myself included, I will have times where I engage in something called catastrophic thinking, where, like, it'll be something like if I'm about to go on a roller coaster, even though I know there are risks involved with getting on a roller coaster and that this thing has been engineered and created and there probably haven't been any accidents that have happened on it, my brain is thinking,
you know.
Right, that I know of, right? It's okay. Could it fly off the tracks? Could such and such happen? Is my seatbelt, you know, really securely fastened on this thing? Am I going to fall out and die and then be on the news about this tragic freak accident that happened, you know? And so that catastrophic thinking, when all it has to be is, oh, I'm going to go on this really fun roller coaster, scream and have a blast. My brain will go to dun, dun, dun. Is it going to be death this time? And so that, you know, that's more of an extreme example. But on a day-to-day basis, it might be I'm working on a paper, or I'm typing something up that I'm putting, you know, a lot of my, you know, mind and heart into, and I'll already be thinking of the worst. Like, when I submit it to whoever it needs to be submitted to, it'll be, oh gosh, they are going to just tear this apart. Yeah. They are going to think it is the worst thing ever. And so that inner critic I have to work on, you know, and it's a daily thing that I have to use positivity with and say, you know what? I haven't received any of that feedback yet. So before it even happens, how about not catastrophizing it and keeping with a positive mindset, so that way when I do get the feedback, I'm not already at a level 10 in my mind being on edge about, you know, whatever feedback they give me.
And then you're like, you know what, it was okay.
Right, exactly.
I actually passed this
That's
thing.
Right. You know, we've all had those moments where we're like, oh gosh, I failed this test. I just know it. I just know it. And then you get the results back and you're like, oh.
Yeah, I actually
passed. Bad as I thought it was.
I had a friend. I had a friend one time. Shout out to my friend Troy. Uh-huh. Love him to death. He's a thinker like you.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when he was in school, mm-hmm. he automatically thought he was just going to fail the test.
Mm.
Just automatically, yeah. all the time. And yeah. I remember one time, I put together like a really, really good show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm talking like. It was going to be Mamma Mia. It was going to
yeah,
be really, really good.
Yeah, excellent.
Had a great topic, had a great this and that. And I get a call from my friend, Troy. He's like, hey, man, I can't do it. I'm like, why can't you do it? I'm about to do this. I'm about to go on air in like an hour.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I passed that math test. I'm like, bro. Really?
Yeah.
We're
yeah.
about to
ruminating on the yeah the math
like,
test.
We
yeah.
we just went through this whole thing, our research and all this, and now you tell me you can't do the show with me.
Oh.
What made me mad was I found out he passed it.
Right. So all of that catastrophizing.
Yeah, all that for
nothing.
No reason. He was like, hey,
yeah.
Man, I actually passed that. You know?
Yeah.
But
and it's like, congratulations. But you know, that's such a great example of yeah, the catastrophic thinking. And
it took him there. It took yeah. him to that place of
despair.
You know what? Like, let me just not do anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. so like another way I remember you told me when we first met, is that you do yoga.
Oh yes. Yes. Everybody. if you have not heard about the importance of self-care. So self-care just refers to things that you do to take care of yourself. And, right. you know, that's definitely something that if anybody who's listening, that is the takeaway from all of this, which is that caring for oneself. And while society might make that sound selfish, it's that same metaphor of when you're riding on a plane and they say, put on your air mask first before putting it on, you know, the other person. And I think the example they normally use on flights is before putting it on your baby. And I remember when I first heard that thinking, oh my goodness, obviously motherly instinct, you would put the air mask on your baby first to save them. Right, but then
you
want to
make sure you can breathe right, first.
Exactly. So if you're in the process of putting on the air mask and then I guess you lose oxygen and then y'all both die, yeah. What's the point in that? So it's one of those things where, yes, self-care. I mean, no matter if you're a stay-at-home mom, no matter if you are a top-level executive at a business, no matter what job you have, caring for oneself is so critical, because when your level of stress is building and building and you have all of these demands, all of these, you know, people asking you for things, different commitments that you have to be a part of, if you are not able to care for yourself, it is going to make doing those things 10 times harder. It's going to be more difficult to be present, because we all know what it's like to be sitting down physically somewhere, but our minds be totally somewhere else. I mean,
exactly.
Yes. So, you know, caring for oneself, that is the foundation of being able to really thrive in all of the commitments we have in life. And I believe that yoga and mindfulness have really, honestly, saved my life. And so if I did not have my daily mindfulness practice that I do, I don't think I would be able to pour into the lives of others like I am, because it's so important for me to make sure that I'm grounded and that when I'm hearing all of these traumatic stories from my clients, that I'm grounded and that I'm not totally uprooted and can't, you know,
you can't
manage.
Help them.
Right. I can't help them if I can't help myself. And
exactly.
So, you know, clients need to have a good
self-assurance.
Yeah, they need to have a therapist who is role modeling to them healthy self-care, because a lot of people don't have individuals in their lives who are modeling to them the importance of self-care. You know, I want my, you know, clients to know that, yes, you being here in and of itself, that's self-care. That's making sure that they're taking care of their mental health. They're doing things to process their feelings. And, you know, there's a common thing where therapists will go to their own therapy too, because let's say there's something that comes up in my life that's going on that's troubling me. I have to make sure that I take care of myself so that when I'm sitting in a session with a client, that I'm present with my client and not all the way thinking about all the other stuff going on in my life.
Yeah, because it's like you hear some, I'm pretty sure you've heard some like really,
oh yeah,
really,
very
really
traumatic
stories.
And yeah,
and it's like my aunt Luce, her husband works in a medical mm-hmm. Works in a mental mm-hmm. not mental, I would say, what's the word I'm looking for, social setting?
Work,
yeah, I guess kind of sort of like that. And mm-hmm. when he's heard mm-hmm. god awful stories mm-hmm. and I'm thinking to
yeah.
myself, I'm like, okay, you hear those stories. My Aunt Luce has heard stories. You've heard some traumatic stories. How do you, like, get in your car, mm-hmm. go home, and
yeah.
just kind of, like...
Right. Whew. Well, you know, that's a common thing within the mental health community, is it's told that you can't take it home with you. You can't take
exactly.
home all that stress. Well,
but
it's like
sometimes that's hard.
It's like, right. I mean, as a human, if I have, you know, an empathetic bone in my body, there are times where I have to really be like, wow, that one really hit me hard. And so maybe I need to the next day spend an extra hour doing yoga. I have to balance it out. So it's one of those things where it's a little unrealistic, in my opinion, to tell somebody, oh, if somebody tells you something traumatic, just block it out and forget it. And on your drive home, just think about rainbows and sunshine. I mean, sometimes you can do that, but other times it's
depending
difficult.
Depending on what that person
yes.
has going on.
Yeah, exactly. So, yes, it's all about a balance. So that's definitely something that, you know, I would like to end with, which is just letting everybody know, please take care of yourself. make sure that you are doing things to fill up your emotional fuel tank. If you feel like you're running on empty, fill it on up.
Also, there's no shame of seeing mental help.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with it, folks.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times, and I'm going to be closing out soon, we think about the finances of it, like, oh man, I'm going to have to drop $300 on this. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then that gets them worried. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know what? I don't want to have anything to do with it. Mm-hmm. And they just compartmentalize it.
Like paying for therapy?
Paying for therapy. Yeah. And it's like, it's the most, what's the word I'm looking for? It's the best thing you'll ever invest.
Right. It's when a good investment.
When you invest your mental.
Yeah. Mental health. Yeah.
I've myself, and I've mentioned it a couple of times. I myself had thought about, you know, talking to my insurance guy. Hey, look, you're taking this X amount out of my money. Is there any chance that I can, you know what I mean? Because I want to, sometimes I get off track. I've suffered from mild form of depression and had my episodes where I'm just like, don't know if I can do this.
Right, exhausted.
And, you know, but all in all, you know, I get myself together. I'm okay.
Yeah.
It's weird because I was saying, you know, I used to eat a lot. And then you just now like it's
food
like
food as a coping.
You for using food as a coping mechanism. Now it's like, okay, now I gotta get to the gym.
Yeah.
And then there's some things in my life I wouldn't touch. Like I don't drink a lot of alcohol because of, you know, folks. Older folks in my mom's side of the family are either passed away and no longer with us or have a colostomy bag.
Right.
And I'm not knocking them for anything.
That's
you know,
right.
A lot of them have turned their lives around,
that's
you know,
right.
found Christ and all that stuff. However, it's like, you know, what their contributing factor was? Drugs and alcohol.
Right, exactly.
And I try to find... And it's weird, but it was not weird. Nothing is weird. You find find peace. I find peace in watching wrestling. I don't know why.
That's your thing.
Like ever since I was like 3 years old, my godmother put me in front of. She said I was just crying and crying and crying. And she just turned on the TV and wrestling was on.
Right, and that would help you.
And she just was like, it was like you weren't even in the room.
Right. So that was soothing for you. Yeah, and that's such a good point that you bring up.
That and coloring.
You know, yes, coloring. See, don't ever underestimate the power of coloring.
I remember you and I used to color a lot.
Yes, that's right. Coloring.
A lot of kids were taking a nap.
That's right. Just coloring things in.
It's
really
so
soothing. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
So you bring up a good point, you know, about various, you know, addictions. You know, it's not just alcohol, drugs. I mean, there are addictions to
bad relationships.
Yeah, people, toxic relationships. There are so many things, addictions to video games, addictions to, I mean, you name it. Anything done compulsively can become an addiction. And so that's another thing, too, is, you know, people to get the treatment that you need if you are a loved one, you know, is struggling with that, is to have a conversation with your doctor about ways to get connected to resources to help heal from that. Because that's another thing to take away from this talk is that healing and hope is possible no matter what the addiction is. So, or no matter what the mental health struggle is. So, there are many great therapists, psychiatrists, social workers, counselors, psychologists.
I think we're in the era where seeking mental help is going to be popular.
Yeah.
Is going to be happening.
Yeah, absolutely. It is on the rise. It's something that we want to continue to be on the rise, which is awareness.
Yes.
Awareness that people will seek out help and not be ashamed to do so. And I think some of that help will come from people normalizing it, like us sitting here talking about it, letting people know that it is common.
Right.
There is treatment for it and hope.
Right.
So if you or somebody you know is struggling with a mental health disorder, go and seek treatment. You can get help from your local doctor. There are many websites that you can consult to get a good fit with the right therapist in your zip code.
Right.
So there is hope.
Right. And as we're closing now, there is a saying on your wall, and I've been staring at it.
Oh, yeah.
Break it down for me, because I'm like seeing it, and I know I'm going to say it wrong.
Yes. It says, "Today you are you. That is truer than true. There is no one alive who is youer than you."
I like that.
Yes, that's by Dr. Seuss. And I have a lot of Dr. Seuss things on my wall because I'm really passionate about just the positive messages that are in a lot of Dr. Seuss's books. And also, I just am really for kids reading, like literacy in America. There's actually many adults, believe it or not, who are reading at elementary reading levels. And that is something that we definitely have to fix. And it starts from childhood.
Yep.
And so we need parents to be reading to their kids bedtime stories to help increase their reading comprehension and all of that. And so I'm always recommending that, you know, parents spend the quality time with their kids reading. And there are so many books that have positive mental health, you know, messages in the books and things that help build confidence. And so that's another thing that I use as a therapist is, you know, it's called bibliotherapy. It's where you use books to help people reach their goals. So for anybody who's ever read a book that's really inspired them and changed their lives, you mm-hmm. know the power of that. And so there are many books about bullying. There are many books about, you know, just building confidence out there. There's one kids book that I just love that I will mention. It's called Mean Jean, the Recess Queen. And it is about this girl who just goes around terrorizing everybody on the playground. And then there's a new girl at school. Well, let me not spoil it. But basically,
don't spoil the book.
Basically, it is the moral of why it's important in life to
treat people the way you want to be treated.
Exactly. And to not villainize the bully, because bullies can turn it around. They can be caring.
Because they're dealing with something.
That is right. So read that book, folks. It is a fun one.
Well, Chelsea, it's been so wonderful.
Yes.
Time has gone by way too fast.
It has. It flies by. And I'm so glad we were able to make this happen.
And I want to thank you so much for getting with me and doing this show.
Yeah.
I'm so glad we got to do this.
Me too.
And, you should be like a, I don't know. Like, you can keep doing what you're doing, but I don't know. I just get this feeling like you're going to do something else. Like,
what do you mean?
I don't know. Like a book writer or something.
Oh, hey, who knows? That's,
I don't know.
That would be awesome. I would love that, to write a book one day. That would be
awesome.
Cool.
That would be awesome. But I don't know. Yeah. I just get this good vibe from you that you are going to be doing something really big. So,
and you're doing big things too. I mean, getting to reach people through radio. I mean, this is huge. So hopefully this touches a lot of people's lives.
I try. So I don't like to boast about myself.
Well,
I joke about it sometimes, but I'm just
But you've got a gifting. And so that is helping heal others, because all they have to do is tune in. And so if they can hear a positive message that inspires and encourages them, that can really help. So I feel like we're all using our gifts and abilities to help people in many ways.
Right.
So it's a really amazing thing to witness.
Right. And guys, I thank Chelsea again for being on the show. Mm-hmm. Tune in on facebook.com/TonyJohnsonShow. I'm in the process of working on a YouTube page for folks that can't get on or listen to or get on facebook.com. So guys, just be sure to check me out on facebook.com/TonyJohnsonShow, and we're out.
All right.